Starting off with our questions, the first one I want to ask you is, as someone who works with children both in theater and with your recent book that you had out, A Planet is a Poem, what drew you to work with children and young adults?
Well, there are long answers and short answers to that. This is my 10th book for young people. The theater work for kids really began when I had children of my own, and I was finding it very difficult to do conventional theater at that point with young children. It just wasn't fitting into my lifestyle at all. But the various play schools and schools that my kids were in were very excited by my background in theater. It was an easy thing for me to adapt the things I'd already learned and start working with young people in theater. It was pretty organic. When we moved to the country, also, that was a major change because there are no theater companies in the country or in small towns. So I went to where the work was. I realized that I had a skill that was valued in a way that it hadn't been in Toronto. Whereas in the small town of Perth and in Eastern Ontario in general, working with children and theater was desirable and also really useful. I could introduce them to things that they weren't getting a chance to get introduced to. There are basic skills, hard skills that I worked on for years that I thought were really important, things to do with movement and voice. Kind of developed from there, and then I developed my own children's theater company and it went on from there. The writing was also organic in that sense. Again, we'd moved to the country. My husband is a children's book writer, so I wasn't unfamiliar with the world. I had been a full-time calligrapher and had taught at University of Waterloo. I'd taught calligraphy and the history of the development of letter form to university students. And I was really passionate about that. Well, and I was doing that when my kids were young. And then when my kids started to learn about letters and writing, I really wanted to teach them some of the things I knew. So the first book came out of that. It was a nonfiction book for 8 to 12 year olds based on how letter form has developed and changed due to history and culture and tools. So that's sort of how it all began, anyway. I guess I developed an affinity for it. I find that young people are much more open to trying things, to experimenting with things, to playing. Young people play really well. And that's much of great interest to me and made them much more interesting than working with adults who are not necessarily as open.
That actually is a great tie-in to one of my other questions, which was, what are some of the challenges you have sort of working and writing for children and with children? But also, what are some of the benefits and your favorite parts of getting to work with these young minds?
Well, the benefits are probably too numerous to mention, because it's not just that the old adage is that it keeps you young, but I think it's much more than that. You have to be open. It has made me a person who listens a lot better than I used to. Working with young people, whether it's in writing or in theater, is a constant improvisation. I'm a terrible improviser on stage. I mean, I'm really awful. And I've taken lots of improv courses, but it's not my métier at all. However, with kids, I do that and I have to do that. I have to listen and move and adapt. And they are teaching me the whole time. Obviously, that's different in writing because unless you're doing a writing workshop with kids, and I do lots and lots of writing workshops, if I'm writing for, if I'm creating for, then that's different. Then I go back to the well that they have given me and try to find that place and work from there. I think that the challenges are always to stay fresh and connected to the things you care about. And so that the things you're working on are meaningful to you. Again, you can't necessarily look at a group of kids and say, oh, they're going to like this and try to lay it on them. Challenges. I am an older person now. So, one of the challenges is to connect and reconnect with young people And to make it an active part of my practice, to do workshops, to get to know people, even if it's getting to know people in their 20s, because they're closer to having been a child than I am at this point. Seeing the world through their eyes now is challenging because they're growing up in a very different world from the world I grew up in. Although there are always going to be similarities in terms of relationships, in terms of learning, in terms of how you view the world.
I've noticed that there seems to be a difference between audio slash oral literature and written literature and stories. And as someone who is involved in theater, which is very much an oral visual based storytelling method, and also a published author, how do you approach the two different forms of literature differently?
Well, I don't really. I do believe in the audio quality of any writing. In particular, my later books, which are much more poetically based, and poetry is based in sound, I work on the audio element as I'm writing and as I'm editing. I don't think that they're different. And one of the reasons I don't think they're different is that when you are reading, you are in your head, and there's a lot of evidence that suggests this, you are in your head converting those symbols into sound. We're not taught sound. We are not taught to speak. We are taught to read and we are taught to write. So our brains go back to the place that is of ultimate comfort while we are reading and goes to an audio base. So there are audio centers in your brain that light up as you read. So, you can read the word basketball on the page and you think of a basketball, but your brain also goes through the formation of the word, just very subtly, the formation of the word, so that you have the basket ball. You have all of those things that your mouth forms flashing through you as you read it. Yeah, for me, it all goes together.
When you do write a book or you're beginning to work on a new play or theater production, and you know that there are going to be children either seeing it or being involved in it, what are some things that you consider before you approach the project?
Whether I care about it, whether it matters to me. No,
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, there's a lot of books out there. There are a lot of shows out there. You're going to spend, if I write a novel, I'm going to spend a year, maybe two, maybe 3 years of my life doing that. It's got to matter to me. A theater piece, even more so, because you're going to spend years working on that, and you're going to involve a lot of other people and a lot of money. It's got to matter. So for me, that's the first thing. Do I care about it? And then why? Why does this matter to me, first of all? Why do I think it matters to the world at large? Why do I think this is something that I could and should put out into the world? That's bottom line. Past that, I will put some consideration into whether I'm expecting adolescent or pre-adolescent children to be reading or seeing this thing.
How do you approach the two differently?
Sometimes in terms of language use, but also an adolescent, anyone who is post-pubescent, is seeing the world differently. They are already starting to see the world as an adult, and they have a different kind of intensity in their lives. The levels of questions are even bigger. They're often less curious. They're curious about what they're curious about, but they're not really curious about, what you might want to present to them. I think I spend a lot more time trying to dig into that place in myself where the intensity of relationships superseded everything else, because that's what happens when you're an adolescent. That's a huge generalization, but yeah. I mean, obviously, there are language changes. And young children, really young children, you need a lot of language play in there because that's what they're doing all the time, and they want to be able to play with language, and they want things that are shorter, and colorful, and Not too dark, not too scary. I mean, a little bit dark, a little bit scary because life is, but it's a balance.
We've been talking about play a little bit for a couple of these questions, and I just want to ask, how do you introduce this art of play into your writing and maybe into your theater productions as well when working with children?
Well, theater is all about play. I mean,
Oh,
they do
yeah.
call it a play. I mean, with theater, you start off with theater games, and you start off, games build groups, and from groups, then you engender an atmosphere of sharing and warmth and play and silliness. Silliness balanced with the seriousness, so you have both things, and it's one of the great lessons kids learn in theater is that the world is full of both things, and that you can have this silly play to a purpose. And there are times when you switch gears and you focus a little bit more seriously on things. Theater's easy. In books, well, it depends on the book. I mean, in a YA, for me, there's not as much play. And that's partly I tend to write about fairly serious things. My most recent book, A Planet Poem, is a book of poetry about the planets. I've explored each planet with a different poetic form. So you learn about the poetic form as well as learning about the planet. So, for example, with Venus, it's a villanelle. There's a sonnet for the solar system. There's an ode for the sun. So you learn different ways of writing. But because it is for younger kids and because it's poetry, there's a lot of play to the language. So then you're playing with sound, and we talked about that already, but how do the sounds work together? They swirl and crash. You focus on the sounds in your mouth.
On that opposite end, as we were talking about balance, so there's the element of play, but also part of the class that I'm taking right now is we're talking about challenged books, which are primarily books that discuss LGBTQ themes, books that talk about diversity, sexuality, feminism, those kind of things. How do you find that children respond to these challenged, difficult topics?
Like everything, children do not know there's a problem until we as an adult tell them there's a problem. I'm actually not interested in writing to a challenged or challenging theme. I think you show, you don't tell, just which is an old theater adage, but I think the same thing is true in writing for young people, especially. You have a book that has two moms in it. You don't need to say anything about that. There are two moms. A child may ask you at some point, "Oh, why are there two moms in this book and I have a mom and a dad?" They may ask you that, or they may not. They just accept. The thing that adults forget is that we've stopped accepting things. We're the ones who are setting up all of these problems. They don't have any problems with any of those issues. They don't have race issues unless we make it an issue for them. So, a child who is being bullied because of race, yes, has a race issue. And so, we need to be able to provide books for that young person so that, first of all, they can feel validated within their own skin, literally, and so that they can see that that does happen to people and how does a person get out of it. So, I mean, I think that's a concept that you write about, but you don't write about it to teach them something. I really don't think you do. I actually fundamentally don't think you teach children through literature or through drama or through art or through anything like that. I actually would have questioned whether you teach them anything. You help them to learn. You show them. When we're older, we need to be taught things, because we're not as flexible and we're not as open. Just to go back to what I was saying before, we're just not. We're really impoverished as we age. And kids are not, they're just so rich. And there's so many things that they are curious about, to get back to curiosity. You don't need to teach them curiosity. What you do need to do is encourage their curiosity and not kill it. You need to allow them to explore the world, to see the world, to provide, show them stuff and let them ask the questions when it comes up for them, and always be in that dialogue. I mean, most children, Where they're going to come across a problem is when it's been aimed at them. And that's why those books are very valuable. So a book that has two moms is especially valuable for a child who has two moms and they need to see themselves in the book. But these are all points of discussion. They're not didactic lessons for a child. I really don't believe in that. There's a wonderful children's pediatrician and educationalist from Poland at the turn of the 20th century, who I've written a graphic novel about. His name is Janusz Korczak. And if you ever want to know anything about educating children, go read Janusz Korczak, because it's all about seeing them and at their level, going to them where they are, not talking down. And with so many people think you've got an idea and you've got to pour it into a head of a child. Life, that's awful. It's really dreadful. There are ideas and concepts we want them to learn, but put them out there, make them available and keep the curiosity alive by encouraging it rather than discouraging it.
And just one final question, because it came to my mind when we were talking about the showing and telling elements. So, with picture books and with theater, there's obviously that element of what you show versus what you say or what you write in the case of books. How do you find that balance?
Well, for one thing, you recognize that you're in a collaborative art form. So when, with a picture book, you give as little direction to the illustrator as possible. And usually you don't pick the illustrator. The publisher will pair the two of you. So that what you write, and you can imagine pictures, but you imagine them kind of theoretically. The same thing is true of theater. You write and you think about pacing and timing. You think about sound and pausing. And you think about relationships of bodies on stage and any of the other elements, the colors, the lights. You think about all of those things, but you leave it open enough so that you work collaboratively with all those other people who come in. An actor is going to have a very different way of saying those words than the one in your head. There is something else, another piece of magic that happens. And whether that happens with me as with my editor or with another director, or where what you've put on the page transforms into something you that is actually beyond your conscious knowing. I understand it a lot with theater, because you put that thing out there and they have all these people and it grows and you see new elements in it. And what's weird is when it happens in writing, because you think as a writer, you've got ultimate control of this. And then the editor or the illustrator find something that's in this other space that makes it become bigger than the sum of its parts. It's quite magic, all of it.
And I said that was the last question, but then something else came to mind, which was earlier we were talking about children and how they react to these bigger topics. And I was kind of curious what you think about the notion that some people have of protecting them from these bigger topics. And so the reason why a lot of books get challenged or banned is by parents who think that they're protecting their children by keeping these two adult topics away from them. So how do you feel about book bans and challenges and keeping children away from certain ideas and topics?
Remember what I said about curiosity? I think that if you start to kill a child's curiosity, there are several things that can happen. One of it, which is they become incurious and they become less empathetic. It is horrifying to have to teach a child about the Holocaust. That's not fun at all. There is a reason why we wait until they are about 10 or so. And that's because of the way their brains have developed and about the way that they can process that information. That's different from banning a book. I think that the need to respect a child's maturity when you're going to deal with something that is really fiercely difficult is important to look at their brain development, their emotional development. In the same way, you don't want to talk about big sexual issues with a prepubescent child, but ju just as they're coming into adolescence, as they're coming into adolescence, they're asking these questions, great time to introduce things like that. I think if you ban things outright, the thing that is really, really disturbing me right now is this whole idea of banning history. And it's happening in the United States most profoundly, trying to pretend that history didn't happen the way it happened, trying to deny fact. What happens when you have someone grow up in this closed little world and they suddenly find out it's a lie, that the whole thing is built on a lie? My second novel, called The Pact, takes place in Germany during the Second World War. And to write it, I spent a year and a half interviewing a neighbor of mine who was a boy in Germany who was in the Hitler Youth, not because he wanted to be or knew anything about it. It was just what happened. You went into the Hitler Youth, you went into school, you were lucky to go to a good school, get a good education, and this was the natural outcome of things. Because of the way that the society was structured, and because of the propaganda, because it was a whole society that was not being told what was actually going on. When he was a young man, when he was 17, the war was ending, and he was escaping from an SS training camp. And he was escaping, as he was escaping with the enemy, the British, sweeping down in and trying to take the prisoners, take all people like him, German children, anybody who had been studying, who had been training to be in the Nazi Party. They were taking the prisoners, which they should. As he found out why and what was actually going on, not just that they were losing the war, but what his country had been doing in the war, it shattered who he was as a human being. I don't want that for any child. I don't want the denial of the complexity of life to shatter somebody. And I mean, we can trace a lot of the damage that young people have through their lack of empathy and understanding. And I think that bans just compound that. Of course, we want to protect our children. I have three children. I have five grandchildren. I want to hold them safe and protect them. But I don't want to deny them the ability to be a human being and care for others. And sometimes caring for others means seeing that other people hurt. And that gives you the responsibility as a member of society to make it a better place.